Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are new to our show, welcome home. This is where you get the best advice possible for new entrepreneurs, especially coaches and consultants who are just starting out. And today we're talking about great copy. You know, I think entrepreneurs, especially new entrepreneurs, can underestimate how much they need to be communicating with their audiences. And when we're in this content-rich online world, and your business is relying on your ability to connect to your audience, having really great content and really great copy is super important. But what is it that makes copy engaging? What is the most effective way to have that conversation with your ideal clients? And what makes for really great copy? So today I am thrilled and you are in for a treat, my friends. I am introducing you to my friend and colleague, Julie Cabezas. Julie is the founder of Copy Crimes, and we were introduced by a mutual friend a couple years ago when I was like over the top with a campaign. I was just like, I can't write all this copy and I really need some help. And I was introduced to Julie and I hired Julie to work with me on developing that campaign. It was around just coming out with the pricing masterclass and the pricing calculator. And she's stellar at what she does. And she works with a lot of high-end coaches, helping them manage their campaigns, and has grown a very, very well-established copywriting business. And I'm sure our listeners will be curious to hear how you did that too. So in our conversation, we're going to talk about the secrets of great copy, how Julie was able to scale her business in a field where most people are still selling their time. So welcome to Life After Corporate, Julie.
Thank you, Deb. I'm super proud and honored to be here.
I am honored to have you as a guest because, you know, I have a super girl crush on you. I loved working with you. We had such a great time writing that copy. I learned so much from working with you. And I consider myself a good writer, but you made me a better writer just by working with you. And it was such an extraordinary experience.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, it's so true. So what is your life after corporate story? We always start with that question with our guests. When did you launch Copy Crimes and what were you doing before then?
I went to school for engineering. Never really knew that entrepreneurship was a thing growing up. You know, I didn't have entrepreneur parents and I went to school for a field that I thought would be very lucrative. It was an expanding field. It was biomedical engineering. And when I went into the corporate world, I felt a little bit like a fish out of water. I've always been the visionary, the big ideas person. And I guess there was something offensive about working my way up from the bottom. I wanted to talk with the executives about what the vision for the company was and where the company was going. And I definitely admit there was a little entitlement in that. But I did work in corporate for maybe 10 years or so. And during that time, I read The 4-Hour Workweek and my creativity kind of exploded in terms of what was possible, what was available. And there was also this added complexity that I had studied something that really wasn't square in my center of interests. I've always been a writer since I was a little girl, but kind of thought of it as a frivolous hobby, not as something that could be a serious career. So I was conflicted in my role at work. I worked my way up and did well, moved from engineering to the marketing department. That felt a little bit more aligned with who I was. There was a lot more creativity, a lot more fun, a lot of travel, working with actual customers and clients on using our devices. That felt more natural. But then I discovered in that process the field of copywriting. And I was like, this is it. This is my thing. It's the combination of the artistic side with, you know, the writing and pulling in storytelling and all these things with my left brain side of conversion and scientific data, the study of the human psyche, human potential, self-mastery. There's so much that goes into it and I just love it. It's the perfect thing for me. So it took me 10 years or 7 years to build up the courage to start my own company. And then it was a long road because I knew very little about business, you know, in terms of validating my idea, all the things that you teach people, Deb, I always say you could have saved me probably 5 years had I really understood what it meant to craft an offer and validate it and like know that what you're selling is something that's desirable to people. So the business side has always been a challenge for me, but I just keep going because I love what I do so much. You know, and it's a pleasure to do what I do every day. So I ended up leaving corporate America after the company, the startup company that I worked for, went through a $1 billion acquisition. There was, you know, I made sure that the new executive team was kind of well, like aware of the all the duties and how the department worked that I was running at the time. And then I started my own company and I've really never looked back ever since.
Oh, it's so good. And probably little did you know at the time you made the leap, like how important writing was going to become in marketing. Like it really exploded so much more than, when was this you were in corporate? Is it more than 10 years ago?
I left in 2011.
Yeah. So that's around the same time that I left corporate and we were still doing a lot of stuff in print. Not everything was online yet. It was really a crazy time. And so content, you know, content is king. Content is exploded on the marketing scene. So, you know, it's so important for us to be able to communicate ideas. And especially at this time in our market where we're saturated. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of coaches, consultants, you name it out there that people can choose to work with. And one of the things that makes you stand out is how you communicate with your audience and how you communicate that brand and what you represent. And I was so impressed with how you approached our relationship and the interviews. You were almost like an investigative reporter collecting a lot of data up front. So I can see how the engineering and the creativity kind of work together with you. So why don't you share with us, what are some of the secrets of really great copy or really great copywriting, the process of writing good copy?
Yes, it's my pleasure. So first of all, I love to say copywriting is simply selling on paper, you know, and it is a different part of your brain that you use to write than you do to speak. So if you think of yourself as a great speaker and then you sit down to write a blog post or something and you're like, why can't I just put this idea on paper? It's totally normal and natural. It's just a different skill, a different area of your brain. But it is just selling on paper. So I always say if you hire a copywriter, make sure they know how to sell, because that's the foundation of copy that actually converts, right? And there is so much more to conversion than just saying the right things. And it all begins with the work that you do, Deb, with people, is really understanding what people desire. Like, what does your customer or client desire, and building desire as your number one objective. So what I find is there's those three major parts of the brain. There's the animal brain, which is where desire starts, the spark of desire. Then there's the limbic brain, where it's like, is this person my friend? Is this person trustworthy? That's what people think of as know, like, and trust. And then there's the logical neocortex, where it's like, does this investment make sense? You know, does the checklist kind of check off? And you need all three pieces to make really great copy. But the biggest step that people miss is just building desire. I followed experts and consultants and coaches and people for years and never bought anything because they haven't, I think they're fascinating and smart and intelligent and they have value, but they've never built a desire with me for a specific outcome or result. So that's really where it all starts, is building the desire, building tension with the audience by painting a picture of something that they would like to have and that they, you can't convince, or what is it? What's the phrase? You can't, I basically preach to the converted, you know, you don't want to convince someone that they want something. You just want to paint a picture of something they already want. And then that starts the conversation and the journey, right? To making the connection that you can actually help them get there.
Right. And so really having that intimate knowledge of the customer that you're communicating with. And that's why market research is so important. You know that, I know that. One of the first things you did in this project, you said, can I talk to a few of your clients? and you got them on the phone and asked them about their experiences.
Yes.
And that's how you connect with people and connect with their desire, by understanding how they think about what they want and connecting with them in their terms. And what was the second one? The second one was building trust.
Yeah, building trust. And that starts with the vulnerability of showing people who you really are. You know, so one of the things people said about you, Deb, is that you're such a business person and able to create results, but you're also the dichotomy of being so approachable. Like, you're not judged when you work with Deb, you're not belittled, or you don't feel stupid because you don't know something. There's just this like playful, connected way of discovery. And that's what you want to make it feel like on your social media channels or in your email, that not only is this person an expert, but I also kind of know something about who they are. And that can be conveyed with storytelling primarily. Your origin story is really important. Certain details, sharing details about your life, like lifting the veil a little bit and getting that person to feel like they know who you are and they're following your journey, you know, as they evolve and grow in the wake of your discoveries.
Yeah. People want to hear that inside story. They do want to get to know you. And I remember when you were helping me write the welcome sequence and we talked about my online dating profile. And that was so funny. Like, I never would have thought that how I had hacked the algorithms on the online dating sites when I was looking for a relationship would be relevant to my audience. But it is, and it makes people laugh, right? So telling those inside stories, and trust comes from consistency, right? And people need to know that you're reliable. So if you're inconsistent, I think, with your copy, with your weekly emails, or if you're only showing up on social media sporadically, that actually hurts, damages trust. What do you think, Julie?
Yeah, I think so. I think trust is built from consistency. Also from credibility. I see so many experts that feel in corporate that they never really need to like boast about their accomplishments or talk about what they've done in the past, unless they're maybe going for a promotion or in these certain very slim circumstances. And they find it to be very challenging to brag without bragging online. So sharing credibility is so, so, so important. Sharing stories, storytelling about yourself, and then that consistency absolutely builds the credibility and the trust.
And conversions aren't always about getting a sale. You know, I think sometimes copywriting is construed as always selling something. Mm-hmm. So talk about the types of copy that we might be writing to engage our audience. You know, so there's a place for sales copy. There's a place for nurturing copy. Mm-hmm. There's a place for educating copy, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the foundation of all great copy is a brand promise. Like, if I work with you, no matter what kind of offer I'm necessarily going for, overall, the brand stands for something. And that leading with that kind of everywhere is really, really powerful. So that'll be like the headline on your website. It might be in your tagline or in your email signatures. It's kind of like, this is the one phrase that you want to engineer that people consistently talk about when they talk about you. And I always say you have great brand positioning if it's very easy to think of referrals. Like, when it's that clear, all of a sudden I'll be thinking, oh, I know this person and this person I could send to you. If it's unclear, you'll get a kind of, that's fascinating or that's interesting, you know? So that's the first piece. It's like, what is my brand promising my client? The second piece of copy is going to be your home online, which is your website. So you'll have your home online, you'll have your home about services pages so that there's a good representation of what it is that you do and who you serve. Then you want to have some way to build your email list, like an opt-in and a follow-up sequence. Deb mentioned a welcome sequence. So you want to have some type of a welcome sequence that I say goes take someone from who the heck are you to, you know, how do I go get my credit card? Like, where do I sign, basically? The welcome sequence, think of someone who's just visited your home for the first time. You want to give them a tour and show them, here's the restroom. Let's put your coat over here. Here's some hors d'oeuvres. Here's a glass of champagne. That could be like a free gift. So your welcome sequence tours the gives them a tour of your business or your brand. And like, here are the different ways I can support you. Here are some testimonials. Here are some great stories about me and how I got to be here, just so that we get to know each other. And it could be like a week long or so. Then you have something called nurture. So when someone enters your ecosystem, your brand, you know, your ecosystem is like your social media and your website and maybe your podcast, all of these media elements that you have, that they start to gain value and expand, like that impression of increase. They keep increasing their value as long as they stay with you. So there's interesting maybe articles or podcast interviews. There are things where they can continue engaging before they buy. And those touch points in the old school marketing, you know, you'd say you need like 8 to 10 touch points before someone buys. That can be accelerated so much with like this, with the online landscape, because I could probably bend you in a whole weekend, Deb, and be like, this is exactly what I need. You know, I know exactly what I need. I need to join this program. So making that entry point really smooth and making the availability of your offers obvious to people who are shopping with you in their downtime.
Yeah.
Those are the main pieces, I think, of copywriting. And then you have more complex things like funnels, conversion events, ways of enrolling multiple people into your programs or services at one time.
And, you know, there is engineering in all of this, you know, because this is like a marketing schematic, and many of us draw these diagrams of what is the user experience when someone enters your ecosystem, right? And they walk into that door of your home, you know, what is that first message? All of those things are little pieces of copy that go in your schematic of your engineering of how you're communicating with people. Mm-hmm. And your nurture sequence, like you said, is, you know, is it a weekly podcast? Is it a weekly blog? You know, it's typically more of a piece of educational content. You're not selling in a nurture sequence. You're engaging with your audience. And it's great to engage in a two-way conversation too, and leave the door open for feedback.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's from people exiting corporate America. That's one of the most confusing parts of the whole process, because they've typically been in either were engaged in a business engagement where money's already been transacted, usually behind the scenes, not where directly with them, but you're already working on something or you're not. And in the online world, because we need to nurture a person, and which essentially just means help them get to know us, build that know, like, and trust, build desire, and then stay connected until they're ready to buy. That nurture feels like, am I giving away too much? What should I write about? You know? And I kind of like to think about it as if you were the voice of your industry, sort of like educating people on the latest and greatest, what's happening, what do you find important? It could be your own discoveries and methodologies that you're developing, or it could just be something really entertaining and fun to read. But it's kind of like, if you were the voice of your industry, what would you want to write about to let your general client base kind of see you as a valued colleague?
Yeah. And people always ask that question, can I share too much? Mm-hmm. Can I over-educate my audience? What do you think about that?
Well, I think the difference for me came when I realized like the mechanism of change is not really knowledge. The mechanism of change is like either accountability and practice or coaching or experience. And there's no substitute for hiring an expert or a mentor or a coach to guide you through that process and to fully have your back in achieving the result. There's a big difference between that and reading an article about an idea. So I personally don't think you can give away too much. I just think that you have to know the difference between knowledge and transformational experience, which is ultimately what people buy.
Exactly. And I think people, especially new coaches and consultants, get confused about that, because one of the first things they start doing is they're afraid of investment. And so they start binging all the free resources. and trying to piece together a DIY business launch strategy or business marketing strategy on their own. And most of the time it fails miserably. It costs you more time and money, and the return on effort just simply isn't there. So I'm a huge fan of going to professionals who know how to implement. So what you just said is, you know, it's not in the knowing of it, it's in the doing of it. And hiring someone who is an expert in the doing, who can show you the ropes of the doing and the success, is where it's at. I mean, I know you have always had a coach. I have always had a coach. You actually introduced me to the coach that I have now, where I was so impressed that you were working with her that I was like, wow, I want to work with her too. So, you know, thank you for that, because as you level up, and it is expediting. I mean, we'll talk about your growth rate in your business, but in the great do-over, my business, I did the numbers yesterday. Our compound annual growth rate for the last 3 years is 98.23%.
Wow.
So that's huge. And it became, and this was after our work together, through the pricing calculator came, oh, six-figure growth can become predictable, because once you know how many clients you need to reach and how many prospects you need to reach, you just double down and do it. And that proved out the formula. And it really all started with our work together. So I'd love for you to share what growing your business was like, because you're in a business like graphic design or copywriting, where most of the time people are selling their time. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking of, oh, well, it's going to take me so many hours to produce this amount of copy. And the problem is, right, you run out of time, you cap your income, and you don't have a chance to scale. But you've actually scaled, or in the process of scaling, this copywriting business. And how'd you do that?
Yeah, well, the biggest shift that happened was when I realized that employees get paid for their time, entrepreneurs get paid for the value they bring to the marketplace. And it, like I said, I don't have a business background, so I knew that intellectually for 10 years, but I really only started living it in the past 2 or 3 years. So what did that look like? The first thing that I shifted was I completely forgot about the copy deliverables in my selling. And I focused on, what does Deb want to achieve in her business, for example? And like, what does that look like? What's the audience size that we need? What are the attendance rates? What's the feeling? Like, how does the sales process work in terms of a new person coming in? And then what do they need to learn? And what awarenesses or aha moments do they need to have along the way? Because I've really realize that the sales process is really all about the changing of the paradigms. Like, oh, this is how I saw the world, but now it's the world's really like this if I want to achieve this result, you know, something like that. So I completely forgot about the deliverables and the time. And I just focused on, what does my client need to be successful? Like, what does success look like? And then what deliverables do they need to support that success? And if we really get focused on the result, what is the result that we're like basically partnering to create together? And then what's the value of that, like in terms of the copy, basically? So I started charging based on the value, which was huge, which allowed me to increase my fees without increasing the amount of time that I was working on each individual project. A lot of copywriters sell like VIP days and day rates and hours and things like that, which is, there's nothing unethical about it or wrong. It's just that the client doesn't really care about how much time you're spending. They want a result, and that's what they're ultimately paying for. So in terms of scaling my own income, meaning generating more revenue for the same time unit, I basically started focusing on value exclusively and like really only selling when I could bring enormous value. If someone said, well, I want to produce 10 blogs a week, and I say, well, how much traffic do you have to their website? And they're like, oh, not really very much. I wouldn't sell that offer because it's not going to bring the client a lot of value. The blog becomes a commodity versus a revenue generating asset. You know, so that was the main focus. And I think for creatives, the old me was kind of like, I'm genius and I'm amazing and my art is like so incredible. And it was like, okay, but that's all about me. I need to focus on the client and what is the result that the client is looking to achieve. And when I made that shift, selling became much more effortless.
You also just highlighted the importance of making sure that the people you hire, whether on a freelance basis or on your team, is a strategic relationship. So you bring value beyond Julie, write my blog. You actually push back and question, is a blog what you really need? Mm-hmm. And what I love is in our work together over the pricing calculator in the masterclass, I came up with return on advantage. And what you just described was your positioning of your service offerings based on the return on advantage that your ideal clients get. So if we tease this apart, and you're investing with Julie and Copy Crimes in creating a brand experience for your prospects and clients, and you've got this strategic partnership, the return on advantage is not the amount of copy that you have in your back-end campaigns on your CRM system. The return on advantage is the relationship that you'll be able to build. And like you mentioned before, build that relationship more quickly. So you're closing more business and you're bringing business in sooner than had you not had this partnership and this strategic content that was developing, nurturing, creating, and growing those relationships.
So well said. And I think part of my zone of genius is a lot of my clients are unconscious competent. Like they're basically masters in their area or in their domain. And when you say, well, how do you create results? They're like, intuition. I've been doing it forever. But you can't really write that on a sales page. You know?
No, you can't.
So through the interviews Deb was talking about before, it's really about like teasing apart your genius and how a client transforms by engaging with you. And it does produce those aha moments quicker. And then the touch points are more compact. And then the person can build that know, like, and trust and decide to work with you a little bit quicker.
I'm convincing myself to hire you again for my next campaign. That's how it goes. Julie, it's been so great having you here. Is there any final advice that you have for our listeners who are, they're across the spectrum, some are pre-revenue, they're still in corporate, they haven't made the leap yet, but most have, mm-hmm. and they're in their first year or two of business and might be struggling with that engagement and they don't know why, right? So maybe they've done a webinar or, you know, they learned how to do a lead magnet, but for some reason, they're not getting those conversions. Mm-hmm. Where do you think they should look to see, you know, what's not working or where can they focus to get more, just better results?
This is Deb, you didn't pay me to say this, but I would honestly say to join Deb's program because what I've really learned, this is, I don't want to deter anyone from working with me, obviously, but what I've really learned is that the first order of business is to learn how to sell your offers. And a lot of people hire copywriters and think this copywriter is going to make me look flashy and amazing and like is going to teach me how to sell my offers. And unless you have a lot of experience in sales, most copywriters can't teach you how to sell your offer. They can only interview you and find out how you sell your offer and then put that on the page. You know, so the biggest heartbreak to me is like investing lots of money in copywriting or marketing services before you as the entrepreneur have really grounded into an offer that sells, and which is basically what you help people create, Deb. And then learning how to sell your offer just one-to-one in a conversation. Once you have that down, then you're really ready for copy. So if you do know that, like in your heart of hearts, you know, I know my offer is amazing and it does sell when I can get in front of somebody, then you're ready for marketing. So how do I call in those people? And then how do I convert them into like leads on my calendar so I can talk to more people? You know, and at that point, you're ready for the marketing. And if the marketing's not converting, then either you're somehow misrepresenting the quality, undervaluing, like you're not fully representing the value you're offering, or your audience isn't a match for your offer. So you're calling in an audience maybe with a misguided Facebook ad, or you're speaking in front of audiences that aren't your ideal client. So we either have an audience problem, a traffic problem, or we have a copy problem, you know, conversion problem. So then it's a matter of just testing and looking at the metrics and seeing, changing one variable at a time, essentially, and seeing, is it the audience or is it the copy?
Yeah. So it's either the audience, the offer, mm-hmm. or the message.
Right.
Message meaning copy, right?
Exactly.
Right. I know there are so many people who may be listening in their car right now or listening on their lunch break on LinkedIn or Facebook, and they're going to want to binge this again and take detailed notes. But if someone wants to reach out to you and have a conversation about what it would be like to work together, how would they do that, Julie?
Yes, they would go to copycrimes.com. copycrimes.com. And we say, we don't steal your voice. We just borrow it for a little while.
Oh, Julie, this has been such a rich conversation. And anytime I get to spend time with you is time well spent. I so enjoy it. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with the Life After Corporate audience today. And my friends, if you'd like to work with Julie and her team, because she has a whole team of copywriters that she has trained and brought on board, it's copycrimes.com. And we'll be talking more about how to effectively market your business and close more sales in the coming weeks. So stay tuned. But that's it for this time. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.